week, a next booklet for our consideration of biblical answers for everyday problems. This booklet's titled Breaking the Addictive Cycle, Deadly Obsessions or Simple Pleasures. It's by a man named David Paulison, part of the Christian Counseling and Education Foundation. As some of the other booklets have done, they introduce it well, so I'm going to use their introduction just to help you get a grasp of why this is an everyday problem that we all face, and not just thinking of those addictions that are maybe more apparent, like drug or alcohol addiction. Stacy loves to shop. She often plans her whole day around going to her favorite stores. Getting something new always makes her happy for a while. But soon she notices something else she really needs. She spends a lot of time thinking about and plotting how to make her next purchase. Lately, she hasn't told her husband when she goes shopping because he would just get upset. Stacy knows she's spending too much money and time buying stuff, but she doesn't know how to stop. Kyle likes playing video games. He especially gets absorbed in the complicated role-playing games, playing them for hours, days, weeks. He spends most of his free time on the computer. His wife complains that he spends far more time playing video games than he does with her and the children, or on household responsibilities. When she goes to bed, he goes to the computer. It's just easier if she doesn't know exactly how long he's playing. He knows he's slacking off at work because he's tired from being up all night. Every morning he thinks, I won't get on the computer tonight after work. But somehow he always does. Jamie enjoys eating. In fact, she enjoys food so much that she plans her whole route to work so she can stop at her favorite donut shop. At work, she maintains a private stash of snacks in her desk just in case I need a little pick-me-up. All morning, she thinks about what she will order for lunch, and then it's on to planning a big dinner. Sometimes she gets up late at night and finishes all the leftovers from dinner. Her blood sugar and cholesterol numbers are too high. Her weight is climbing. Jamie knows she should cut back on food, but whenever she tries to diet, she thinks about food even more. It's easy to see that Stacy, Kyle, and Jamie are looking for pleasure, but the harder they try to find it, the less pleasure they feel. Instead, they become obsessed with getting more and more of what once gave them enjoyment. That's the introduction by Paulison about addictive behavior or addictive cycle. I mentioned that the introduction helps you to recognize that this is something that addresses a concern for everyone, not just those that have addictions that we would classically recognize as being especially destructive, addictions to drugs or alcohol or pornography or something like that. There is something about an obsession or about the human character that tends towards wanting something to please us and looking in the wrong places for those things to please us. Paulison starts by talking about the fact that God has given us a created order that is good and very good. And that because of that, there are many, many different types of simple pleasures that God has given to us for our enjoyment. And it's good for us to start with that idea just from the created order of things. You can look at Genesis chapters 1 and 2 and you'll find God making all things and declaring that they're good. And you can look at what Paul says in the New Testament about recognizing that all things are lawful for him, but not all things are profitable, and that he wouldn't be mastered by anything. that admits that there are pleasures that God gives to us that are good and right, and it's okay to enjoy them. I say that just to make sure that you don't go down the wrong road and misrepresent the Christian teaching to say that the answer to obsessions is to cut yourself off from the enjoyment of those simple pleasures. So, for instance, some have said that they would cut themselves off from material possessions and live in poverty. Some have said they would cut themselves off from food. They would eat the bare minimum and not enjoy what God has given. Some have said they would cut themselves off from marriage and from sexual intimacy, and they've become celibate. And those are wrong Christian answers to some of the evils of the obsessions that we see around us. God has made us to enjoy those good things. So what makes pleasure innocent, or what makes it the opposite, what makes it to take a wrong position in our lives? This really goes back to the first commandment of the Ten Commandments. I'm looking for my Sunday school class. In our Sunday school class, just today, we talked about the first commandment, right? So what is the first commandment?
We shouldn't
have other gods before. That's right. And when we studied that today, we found out that there are sometimes good things that God has given that we put in the place of God. We might put food or games or shopping, all which have their place in a Christian world and worldview. We might put them in the place of God in answering our problems, of making us happy, of giving reason and meaning to our lives. Paulson speaks of the innocent pleasures in this way. He says they don't pretend to save you or protect you. They don't promise you meaning and identity in life. They don't take life's fragility, pain, frustration, disappointment, and uncertainty and wash them away. They are not the giver of every good and perfect gift. They are just gifts that you enjoy. They're innocent because they don't pretend to be anything more. You might remember that in our last study, when we were talking about peer pressure, that we noticed that one of the signs that you're falling prey to peer pressure is that you or someone you love is not giving themselves to spiritual things because they have begun to look towards other people or other authorities or influences in their life to answer either the pain or loneliness or sadness or to give joy rather than finding that in God. The way the author last week put it is that people look to them as a quote-unquote functional Messiah. In other words, you've replaced God with that peer group. In this case, you've replaced God with that activity or that the way you spend your time, or it could be a substance. Paulson goes on to describe several characteristics of the addictive cycle of obsession, or taking a simple pleasure and making it into an idol for you, or a functional Messiah. I'm going to, he has five of them. Let me just list them real quickly, and then we'll spend some time talking about them. One of the signs that an innocent pleasure has become an idol for you is to say that the pleasure is wrong. Second, the pleasure captivates and captures you. Third, that the pleasure is hidden. Fourth, that the pleasure steals you away from good. And fifth, the pleasure doesn't deliver. So I'll go back and elaborate on some of these. First of all, you've become obsessed with something. If that activity is just wrong, then it's an obsession, and you sinfully adopted it as an idol. And this one would be pretty obvious. When you get pleasure from something God has forbidden, then you've set up an idol. For example, if you give vent to anger without restraint, and you go away and you think, "I feel better. That felt good," and then you have chosen to indulge in a pleasure that God says is wrong. Here's where the abuse of alcohol or drugs also fail this test, because they ruin the temple of God, which is your body. Others would be sexual activity outside of marriage, passing along juicy pieces of gossip. These are things that you may have compulsion. You may know that they're wrong, but you've adopted them because they make you feel good. They answer something. They make you feel important or loved or cared for. You've built on the wrong foundation, to go back to Ephesians. Second, the pleasure captivates and captures you. In this case, the activity itself may not be sinful in and of itself, but your use of it can become sinful. It may come to dominate your thought life so that it seems like you can't think of anything else. Think of the example that Paulson made in the introduction of the man who can't wait to get on the video game to develop whatever is happening there, or that spends long hours and vows today, I'm not going to do that. I just won't. And yet, the end of the day comes and he finds himself in front of the computer again. Think of the woman who found pleasure in shopping, or would be restless without buying something new. Here again, it's not wrong to play video games. It's not wrong to shop. It's not wrong to buy new things. But if you find that there's an inordinate amount of time that you are thinking about that throughout the day, then you need to take stock. Is this assuming too much place of importance in your life? Paulson even goes so far as to say every human being is obsessive compulsive. You probably have heard the phrase OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Some of you maybe have seen a funny video about it. That it's usually associated with people who have to organize things if things are disorganized, and there's certain personality traits. Paulson says everybody's is OCD. And he says OCD is not so much a diagnosis as a description of humanity. Obsession means that something is too much on our minds. Compulsion means that something is too much on our actions. It leads to a stain. Paul says, "All things are lawful to me, but not all things are profitable. I will not be mastered by anything." It's that mastery of your life that defines that obsession and compulsive behavior. If there's a pleasure that you just can't do without, it's exercising a mastery in your life that you need to be warned of. Third, the pleasure is hidden. Sin likes to hide. It just does. You know it too. When your parents come home unexpectedly and you hurriedly hide the book that you were reading and go to clean up like you were supposed to and feel embarrassed, your sin is trying to hide. There are lots of other examples of that. If you engage in an activity that you don't want anybody else to know about, you're hiding something. And that's part of the power of sin, to not want to be discovered. Doesn't want to be unmasked. In that case, you should... another reason for you to take stock of that either desire or thing or activity in your life, to see what kind of control that it has. Jesus said that sin doesn't want to come into the light, and that the sinner doesn't come to the light because he is sinful and he knows that the light will expose that. And next week, when we talk about practical steps to take, we'll come back to Jesus' saying about coming into the light. Let me move on to fourth. The pleasure steals you away from the good. In this case, what Powelson has in mind is that the desire for that activity or that thing comes to so dominate your time that you get to the end of the day or the end of the week and you look back and you said, you know what? I intended to go and call on my neighbor who is sick. And I didn't. The week just got away from me. I don't know where the time got to. If you go back and you evaluate the time, you might be surprised at where the time got to. That it... that you may have been consumed by this compulsive type of behavior where you're involved in something in an over the top type of way. I read recently that it's estimated that children growing up today watch an average of 4 hours of TV every day. Tom Pinson was talking about this at camp this summer. He was talking about growing up in a home where there was some brokenness, and that the TV was always on, and it was something that he came to almost rely on, the TV being there as a sense of relief or distraction or escape. But think about just those terms right there of answering some fundamental questions about your life. Distraction, relief, escape. It's promising you something. And here's an example of an activity that it may not be TV, but it might be online movies or videos or cute kitten videos that just come to take up way too much time. That's not a problem. That's not a problem in what? It's not a problem in some households, but maybe it's cute pandas in your household. I don't know. But,
Thank you.
If you find yourself getting to the end of the week and you're determined to do a good thing and you didn't, look and see how you did spend your time. You might be surprised at time when you might have been able to intentionally carve out time to do good, and yet you were consumed by something else. Again, it might be something good. It might be reading books. I'm prone in this direction. It might be work. It might be spending time in other activities that are wholesome and good. But if they consume you, then, and if they steal away from the good, then take stock of that. Fifthly and finally, the pleasure doesn't deliver. Guilty pleasures, well, we call them guilty pleasures sometimes rather than innocent pleasures, because they promise to answer something. I talked about TV distracting us or giving us an escape. Reading a book is that way for me. It may be something else for you. You might bury your sorrows in something. It's promising you relief. It's promising you deliverance. It's promising you pleasure or identity or meaning. And at the end of the day, it just won't. On the more obvious addictive behavior, you can see the progression. A drug starts out giving a certain amount of pleasure, but there comes a time when the level of that drug doesn't give the same amount of pleasure, and so you increase the drug. It hasn't delivered what it promises. The same is true with other addictive compulsive behavior. You think you have it managed, but it's actually managing you. It's promising certain things, but it can't deliver. So here are some diagnostic questions that I'll leave you with today. Fill in these blanks. And these come from Paulison as well. When you're bored and lonely with nothing to do, you blank. So just in your own mind, fill that out. When you're stressed, frustrated, and worn out, you blank. What is it that you do in those circumstances? When you're hurt, betrayed, and treated unfairly, perhaps grieving a loss, perhaps aggrieved at unfair treatment, you blank. Now, there's some diagnostic questions to help you evaluate. Where do you turn to find relief, escape, pleasure, meaning, fulfillment, activity, those types of things? Next week we'll delve into some of the biblical responses to this. Hope you can already see where I'm headed with the first commandment and with some of the other practical things I've already said. We'll talk about strategies. I wanted to give a good amount of time just talking about the nature of idolatry today and some of the obsessions and compulsions that we can be prone to. I'll take a couple of questions or comments before we go to our time of prayer. Any questions or comments? Vicki?
That it's wrong and it's painful, but sometimes the exposure is even more painful. So how do you come to that place of realizing that that has to happen in order for healing to come? I think we're so afraid of the exposure. You know, Adam and Eve hid from God.
Yeah.
So we know that.
Yeah.
You know, we want to hide the sin not because we necessarily want to keep it, but the getting rid of it.
I'll talk a little bit more about it next week. For me, I think it comes back to what do you love most? And if you... It's stated as plain as I can. I think we do that because we love the sin more than we love... We love ourselves, too.
We know it's destroying us, but we don't want
But loving yourself is also idolatry too. So we love, it may be that sin that we're protecting the sin, we're protecting ourselves, we're loving those more than we love God. That's kind of the cold clinical doctor answer that kind of rips the Band-Aid off real hard. But I think we have to come to terms with that to help us deal with sins that have such a hold in our lives.
Kind of highlights verse that perhaps one addiction many of us might have is addiction to what other people think of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Related there, my reputation or pleasing other people, or making sure that people think of me a certain way. So that humiliation can be very painful. But attack that idol as well. I love myself and I love other people to think I'm great.
Yeah.
Well, that goes back to like what we were learning in Sunday school. We fear man's opinion more than God's, because we know God knows.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd rather just let not anyone else know.
Yeah, God's dealing with us may seem like, well, eventually I'll have to.
Yeah.
But right now, if I have to deal with this and it comes out in the open, everyone's going to know. And that seems way more painful than just putting off for later.
Isn't it interesting how these are all tied together as we're talking about these things?